This talk was given by Jeffrey Shugan Arnold Roshi at Zen Mountain Monastery. Shugan Roshi is the abbot of the monastery and the Zen Center of New York City. This talk, like all of our talks, is offered free of charge. If you'd like to make a donation or find out more about our retreats and residency programs, visit our website at zmm.org. Thanks for listening.
It's from the Blue Cliff Record, case 50. Yunmen's Every Atom Samadhi, the pointer. Passing beyond stages, absolutely transcending expedient means, mind to mind in mutual accord, each phrase harmonizing with the other. If you have entered the gate of great liberation and attained great liberty of action, how can you measure the Buddhas and ancestors or be a mirror and guide for the essential vehicle? But say, when taking charge of a situation directly, whether going with or going against, whether vertically or horizontally, how will you be able to speak a phrase to express yourself? To test, I'm citing this old case. Look. A student once asked Master Yunmen, "What is every atom samadhi?" Yunmen said, "Food in the bowl, water in the bucket." Verse. Food in the bowl, water in the bucket. The talkative teacher can hardly open his mouth. Northern Dipper, Southern Star, their positions are not different. White foamy waves flooding the skies arise on level ground. Trying or not trying, stopping or not stopping, each and every one is a rich person's child with no britches. This session, our founding session, is usually a little bit of a sangha reunion, as after the winter months, Rahatsu and January and February are usually quieter, not as many students coming to session, and so usually with the beginning of Ango and these sessions in the spring, they're we're seeing lots of familiar faces. And right now, they're all in a black box. We know there's life in there. We just don't know what kind of life it is. So tomorrow, Hojin Sensei and I will, and Saturday, we'll spend a little bit of time with those of you who are doing this session at home. It's been really hardening. I've been checking in with Hokyu and Kien just to see, trying to peer into that black box and just see how many folks are sitting with us in the morning and during the day, listening to the talks. It's really something. So it's nice to be able to use this technology in this way. Can imagine in earlier times, not so long ago times, how very different this would have been for so many people, this crisis, this period of time. What is every atom samadhi? Every time I've come back to this koan over the years, I've always gotten more sustenance from this very simple dialogue with Master Yunmen. And I think Suedo is playing a little bit when he talks about the talkative teacher, because Yunmen was known for being very spare with his words, very often responding to a question with one word, two words, very, very bare, very direct, often hard to grasp, hard to penetrate. And in the point to when he talks about passing beyond stages and transcending expedient means, mind to mind and mutual accord. How do we speak about liberation? What is What is it to be free of all self-clinging and other clinging? Passing beyond attachments to stages and ranks and identities. Master Linji said, there is a true person of no rank whatsoever that moves in and out ceaselessly through your senses. It's a very powerful teaching within a way of training in which we have entering as students and stages of training and chief disciples, stages of monastic discernment, and so on. And that within that, because we could think of that as using the kind of things that are used in the world and often are sources of suffering. And so how to use those and understand that they're each and every one free of any intrinsic meaning. We give each of those the meaning on the basis of its skillfulness. And the challenge of the students, of each of us, is to use it skillfully and not be used by it, to understand that it is something we have constructed. It has no intrinsic meaning. To realize or transcend expedient means, the so very important aspect of compassion and wisdom that merge together in upaya and skillful means. That compassion is not just something that exists in the ether that you just sort of pluck out of thin air and apply it equally everywhere. Compassion is that which alleviates suffering in accord with time and place and person and situation and rank and identity and the whole lot. And so to transcend skillful means is to realize, to understand skillful means, to use skillful means and realize that it is all similarly empty of any inherent potential. To realize Buddha mind is the mind of all sentient beings, your mind, my mind. Phrases harmonizing with the other is the intimate encounter, the subtle communication that we begin to experience directly when we stand on the ground of reality. Master Dogen says, mountains belong to those who love them. That love is the love of direct encounter, of subtle communication. When you step out on a day like today that is bright, bright, clear, and something in you stirs, that's subtle communication, an intimate encounter. In Seishin, we spend most of our time here in the Zendo. We get up and within minutes we're sitting. We take the longest break of the day to have caretaking practice. And then we come back and sit more. And then we take another short break and then we're back again. Then we have supper, then we're back again, and then just a few hours later of sleep, we're back again. It really is ceaseless practice. And all of those moments outside of the Zendo are that too. And so when this student asks, what is every atom samadhi? It's a really powerful question. Every atom samadhi. We live this life, it arises, it passes moment after moment. We think about things, we plan for tomorrow and next year and our lives and our death. And yet we should do all of that knowingly. We should know that in all of those moments, if we're doing it well, then we are both taking care of today and tomorrow, and at the same time, we don't know. We don't know. nobody's life turns out the way they planned. Not entirely. Sometimes dramatically different. It is a passing cloud, and it is here and now. Here and now, here now. That is the one true thing. And so if we are distant from, if we are shut out, if we shut ourselves out from this one true thing, then naturally we will feel bereft. We will feel lacking. Samadhi is the right concentration that arises from right understanding, right intention, right speech, right action, livelihood, effort. It is our natural state of mind. It is your natural power. Untrained, it becomes unwieldy. It moves somewhat capriciously. It moves according to desires. It follows after things. It reacts ceaselessly and tiresomely and dangerously. It has little stability, and we experience that lack of stability. It has little strength, and we experience that lack of strength. And that's, I think, why in our lives without training, we seek so many things to try and give us that sense of stability and inner strength and confidence and self-power, churiki, that perhaps we sense exists within us, but we're not able to access. In the Abhidharma teachings, it says that in order for us to know anything, to perceive anything, that there has to be a sense organ, our eyes, our ears, our tongue, our nose, our skin, our mind, that comes into contact with something. And in that moment of contact, there has to be a sensation, feeling, that is sufficient, strong enough that it comes into our awareness, our attention. In other words, our attention turns towards, or it comes into our attention. And so it makes contact with our consciousness. We, in that moment, know that feeling. And from that, then, we bring forth intention. This is the skandhas. And so when our sense faculties, when our attention is inattentive, then, or when our sense faculties are dulled or cloudy or distracted, preoccupied, then when it comes, when that sense comes into contact with something, a object or a sound or a taste, the feeling, the sensation is diminished, it's dampened, not within the sense organ, because the sense organ does exactly what it's designed to do, which is to taste, to see, to smell, to hear. But within our consciousness, that sensation, that feeling is dampened or dulled, muted, which means it's hard for it to come into our attention. Because when our attention is preoccupied or numb, then it's looking elsewhere. It's busy. And then our intentions become less clear, less conscious, less deliberate. And which means, but we respond. And so that's when we respond habitually or automatically, reactively. And then when we think about it this way, it makes sense, our culture makes sense, that given that, that the object would have to assume a larger and larger presence, right? It has to be more active, more colorful, more loud, more startling. In order for it for the feeling contact that comes when our sense engages it to enter into our attention, to get our attention. Which means there's less and less room for any kind of subtlety or gentleness, any kind of quiet beauty. Subtle profundity. That just doesn't come through. It's interesting, you know, it's like if we to watch an old film, and it doesn't even have to be that old. And, you know, if we're really just sort of on a diet of what's being made today, you know, certainly mainstream, it seems like, then oftentimes it's like, there's nothing happening here. It's moving too slow. There's no action. It's sort of like one atom samadhi. It's fragmented, fractured, it's very slight. And so then, naturally, the experience that we do have is going to seem, it's not very alive. It's going to, the experience we have of ordinary life. You know, it's interesting in this koan, the student says, what is every atom samadhi? Yunmen didn't say, a dragon riding the clouds, a mountain split in two, heaven and earth shattered apart. He said, food in your bowl, water in your bucket. So ordinary. It passes by us every day. And so with all of this preoccupation, it makes sense that we would not experience things for their within their aliveness, as their aliveness. And that being a very unsatisfying experience, we would then go looking elsewhere. We'd be naturally seduced by things that are going to, you know, sort of hit us on the head. I was thinking about a book I read many years ago by Richard Louv called The Last Child in the Woods, and he was an educator. And he's basically, in his working with school children, mostly younger, through teens, I guess, mostly, up through high school, he had the sense that successive generations of kids were growing up inside. And that the parents may not be noticing that because many of them grew up outside. And so they had that experience, but they weren't able to quite relate or recognize what was happening for their children. And he talks about how in, you know, certain communities, gated communities, you know, with rules and regulations, that he talked about the criminalization of play. You know, building forts, damming up a creek, just doing what kids do was like, you couldn't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that, you can't do that. So the kids are kind of driven inside. And driven inside, what's given is very dynamic and active and, you know, sensory potent. And so he traveled all around the country just talking to children in classrooms and talking to teachers and talking to parents. And so it's very anecdotal, but it's really fascinating. He talks about when oftentimes children were taking out into the woods outside, that they would spend a little bit of time, then they'd say, there's nothing going on out here. But once they were encouraged to stay a little longer and sort of got past that initial, you know, resistance, that they began to experience something. In other words, once there began to be a settling down, a not seeking something elsewhere, they began to move more in accord with that place. He said, unfortunately, oftentimes when the parent the next day would say, shall we go out again? They said, no, we did that. I want to go play my game. Food in the bowl, water in the bucket. Said the Yunmen when he taught that his teachings always had contained three phrases. One, that his teaching, such as this, would stop the myriad flows, which means it doesn't stimulate your intellect, right? That you try and understand it intellectually and it stops that, sort of dries up the streams of thought and allows us to experience things more directly. That they cover, his teachings cover heaven and earth. In other words, in this food in the bowl, that everything is included. It covers heaven and earth. Nothing is left out. And that it follows the waves. That he was always teaching in accord with the needs of the student. Of course, these teachings are inclusive. And it's not just Yunmen that teaches this way. When the Buddha, in the Four Foundations of Mindfulness, talked about focusing internally on the body, on the breath, on feelings, on mind and mind objects, he spoke in each case of focusing internally on the body in and of itself. Whether you're experiencing that breath internally, externally, more expansively, or both, in and of itself. When you're experiencing a feeling, a sensation, wherever, however you experience that, that you experience that in and of itself. That when you're mindful when walking, or sitting, or standing, or lying down, that is in and of itself. What is that? In and of itself, inside itself, of itself, itself is sufficient. There is nothing more needed. There is nothing more, period. And that's in the practice of mindfulness is moving, we might say, in the direction of Master Yunmen's food in the bowl, water in the bucket. And that is our practice. It is our practice of every moment, every atom, every moment. And because that is so challenging, in a sense, it's one of the great challenges of practice, that constancy, that ceaselessness. Right? In our habitual way of being, we're so accustomed to turning off, turning on, turning off, turning on, turning on, turning on, off, on, off, on. Tuning in, tuning out. Waking up, going to sleep. A constant sort of breaking, interruption, constantly interrupting. And so to stitch that together, to experience that as a seamless continuum, is breaking a very, very deep, strong habit. And that's why when we begin to experience that continuity, usually it frightens. It's frightening, which is kind of interesting, right? That we would be actually, and not just, not like, okay, I decide to be frightened. It's like reacting with fear, with anxiety. I've talked to people who were practicing at home, and when they experienced that deeper level that was more sustained, it so frightened them that they got up and stopped sitting. They weren't sure what was going on. It's like, what is it when we have a taste of our birthright, of our natural state, and it's so unfamiliar? It just takes time, patience. Going back to drink from that spring over and over again. And so we gather the mind from all of its distributions, all of its wanderings, gather the mind into focus, into attention. And in that attention, feeling, vedana, sensation becomes more vivid, right? So that's what happens during sesshin when things come more alive in our senses. It's a natural occurrence. It's a natural thing that's happening as we return to a more natural state of mind. And that which we're experiencing with more aliveness is always alive. The mountains are always waiting to be loved. And when we love them, when we see the mountain, Dogen says, the mountain rejoices. People are like that. The greatest gift is to give attention. And so as we're developing our samadhi, developing our mindfulness, but the mind is unwieldy and it's accustomed to its old ways and it wants to maintain that state, that fragmentation, we have to apply effort. And very often in the beginning, that effort will be overly effortful. And so there's tension, there's control, there's tightness. And in a sense, it's an honest endeavor. Right? If you're crossing a full river and it starts to push you downstream and you grab a branch, you got to hold on tight. You got to hold on greater than the force of the river. Can we do that without aggression? That's the key. Can you do that without hating the river? That's what's hard for us. They get conflated. Right? When we're just practicing this mind, right, and we perceive it because of our karmic mind, we perceive that as a struggle. Right? Because we want something. It's not appearing in this moment in the way we want it to appear. We're not getting what we want. Something seems to be pushing against that. That we relate to as a struggle, a conflict. We're being kept from something. And that brings forth a sense of conflict, of fighting. And so it makes sense that we would react in the ways that we do, karmically. But we don't have to. And so to develop this every atom samadhi without the aggression, without frustration, without anger, without judgment, all of those are just signals to us. We think they're signals of truth. They're just signals that we're getting caught, we're making a connection in our mind with what's happening, the result of which is wrong, is bad, shouldn't be happening. And that's not right understanding. Shanti Deva said, I appeal to those desiring to guard their minds. Always diligently guard your mindfulness and your introspection, your examining mind, your inquiring mind, your insightful mind. This is why the senses are spoken of as thieves. That through our senses we get lost. Our stability, our patience, our understanding, gets sort of taken away, stolen. He says, just as a person smitten by disease is unfit for many kinds of work, so the mind lacking mindfulness And introspection is also not fit for any work. It's very difficult to live, to maneuver, to live in harmony. What has been heard and pondered and cultivated, like water in a cracked jar, it doesn't remain in the memory of the mind that lacks introspection, that lacks mindfulness. The mind becomes leaky. Even many learned people who have faith and great perseverance can become defiled by vices on account of the fact of their lacking introspection. Even when we've developed and we have understanding and we've cultivated, in moments when we forget, we trip up. This band of thieves, the mental afflictions, looks for an entrance. Upon finding an entrance, it plunders and destroys life within the more fortunate realms of existence. And so these afflictions, these thieves, our greed, our unskillful desire, our anger, all the forms of ill will, irritation, frustration, judgment, harsh judgment, our dullness, our boredom, our apathy, our doubt, self-doubt, doubting the Dharma, that it's like, it's as though they're little animals, they're little beings that are just waiting for an opening. And when they find an opening, zip, they come in, and suddenly we're being visited. And it plunders. It plunders that which we have been cultivating, right? And that's why, until that really shifts, practice is, it's a lot of like standing on one foot. It's very easy to get toppled over. And so he says, therefore, mindfulness should never be displaced from the gate of the mind. Always keep it here. And so in Sesshin, when we wake up, first thing, you wake up, maybe you wake up from a dream and your mind is filled with images, right? Or maybe you wake up and just immediately your mind moves into a very, very familiar, very habitual place. It's interesting that oftentimes when we wake up in the middle of the night or first thing in the morning, we can wake up within a kind of cloak of some kind of negativity, a kind of sourness, a staleness. Right? And so right there, he's saying, place your mindfulness at the gate of your mind, right? Rather than just getting up and sort of doing what we need to do to get to the next place while we're carrying those thieves with us, and they're getting stronger. And they're basically establishing the beginning of this miraculous day. Once the mind stops wandering in restlessness and anxiety, boredom, excitement, and fear, even then, within that stillness, that quiet, that spaciousness, it's as though there's something that is still present, something that seems to hold us back. That's often where the fear comes up. It can, that sense of witness, that a deep or quiet anxiety, a desire to maintain control. Food in the bowl, water in the bucket. Footnote says, inside the palace, they don't ask about the capital. When you're in the middle, when you're in the inner chamber, you don't ask about the inner chamber. When you're in the place of abundance, you don't go searching for abundance. In a fast called by Master Dogen on Undivided Activity, Dogen says, realization is birth, and birth is realization. At the time of realization, there is nothing but birth, totally actualized. Nothing but death, totally actualized. Realization is food in the bowl. Food in the bowl is realization. At the time of realization, there is nothing but food in the bowl, water in the bucket, totally actualized. He says this kind of activity, food in the bowl, makes food in the bowl wholly, entirely, utterly, in and of itself, food in the bowl. Actualized at this moment, this kind of activity, this water in the bucket, is neither large nor small. It's not immeasurable nor measurable. It's not remote nor near. It is undivided activity. It can't be compared. And so in mindfulness and developing concentration, in coming closer, you know, in order to measure something, just in an ordinary sense, you have to have it in your view, right? You have to have it at some sufficient distance that you can see it, observe it, measure it. The closer it gets, the harder it is to measure. And so when we practice the breath, being the breath, practice a koan, not two in the koan, practice shikantaza, where everything is present and nothing is divided. It's not near or far, it's not measurable or immeasurable. It's not alive or dead, it's not existing or non-existent. And to let go that fully, that completely, is trust. In that one moment, no longer held back, it is a deep, deep trust. And that's why practice tends to unfold day by day, hour by hour, month by month, as we gain that trust, which is completely integrated with everything we call practice. They're mutually dependent on each other. And there are moments where that trust is deep, and there is a complete release, and there is an intimate encounter. And usually quickly the mind comes back to regain control, to know, to describe, to now have a story to tell, to turn it into an equation. 1 + 1 = 2, this plus this equals that. And so trusting. The mind that knows beyond knowing. And so we have to go back to the spring and drink again. And go back to the spring and drink again. Vasubandhu said, or Buddhaghosa rather, said, when he was talking about the four measurables, he said, dwell pervading, fully intent, in one direction with your heart infused with loving kindness. Now, dwell intent in the second direction, and now in the third direction, now in the fourth direction, in loving kindness, and now above and below and all around, everywhere and equally. Dwell, pervading the entire world with your heart infused, saturated, in and of itself with loving kindness. Abundant, exalted, measureless, free from enmity, and free from all affliction. Every atom samadhi, loving kindness. Every atom samadhi, freedom from suffering. And so when we hold, as we're chanting the immeasurables, and you hold an image of someone or someone's, or the whole of humanity, or everyone at this moment that is sick, or everyone that has died from this illness, or everyone that is afraid, or everyone whose lives are being shaken, and they don't know about tomorrow. And as you hold those precious beings in your mind, hold them pervading with your complete intention in one direction, with your heart infused with loving kindness, and then in the second direction, east, west, north, and south, above and below. That's what he's saying. Make your whole being equally and everywhere pervading with loving kindness, abundant, exalted, immeasurable, free from any hatred or enmity. It's a practice. I was thinking of the sixth ancestor, Huainong, and when he received the robe and bowl from his teacher and then was told to go off into the mountains for some years. And Monk Ming, you remember, those of you who know the story, came self-righteously to reclaim the robe and bowl of Bodhidharma from this unworthy. And that Huainong turned and said, "This was given to me in faith. You cannot take it by force." And he put it down on the rock and he says, "Here it is for you to have. Do with it what you will." And Monk Ming was shaking and could not lift it. What Buddhaghosa is describing, that abundance, that immeasurable pervasion, all pervasion of loving kindness, of compassion, of sympathetic joy, of water in the bucket and food in the bowl, of your breath, can't be taken by force. It will not be taken by force. And effort is necessary. And so right effort. And that is the place in which practice occurs. May all beings be at ease. Let none deceive another or despise any being in any state. Let none, through anger or ill will, wish harm upon another. Just as a mother, a parent, anyone who loves someone with their life. Just this way, with a boundless heart, with a boundless, abundant, immeasurable, all-pervasive heart. Every atom, samadhi, heart, mind, being. That degree of faith, that degree of letting go. That degree of release. Radiate that over the entire world, upwards to the skies, downward to the depths, outwards and unbounded. It is now free from all hatred and ill will. It is there when you're standing, when you're walking, when you're seated, when you're lying down. It is free from drowsiness. It is free from dullness. It is free from aggression. That's why it is abundant. That's why it is measureless. And then the Buddha says, we should sustain this recollection. Sustain this. Practice this. Now, now, now. When we wake up, when we go to bed. I remember in the beginning of my training thinking, hearing that and just, and basically thinking, that's impossible. Basically. I just thought, I just think that's impossible. I was like, okay, so now what? And so I just practiced here, right? Overwhelmed by the idea of every moment, every atom, right? That was just too far away, too distant, too impossible, too unknown. Too not me, not my mind. And so I did one true thing. I stopped thinking about it. Mostly. And I just practiced what I could do, which was just about the right thing. Because what I was caught in was just a lot of ideas. Sustain this recollection. This is the sublime abiding. And to appreciate that, because all things have one nature, all things arise in mutual dependence. And this is what the Buddha realized. And this is what anyone with any instrument looking at any aspect of reality objectively will discover, is discovering, has discovered in their own way. What that means is that when we practice in this one moment, small though it seems, limited, not yet mature, wobbly, that in that one practice of this moment, it is not this one moment, this one practice. In other words, it reaches upwards and downwards in all four directions. It reaches all the way through. Even if we feel like we're sitting on the surface or practicing on the surface, that's just our perception. That's just our limited view. And so when we have faith in that, it's much easier to not get so hung up by the moment-to-moment slings and arrows. In that way, we see that that diamond, the Vajra, the great jewel that is enlightenment, that is your nature, that when you look at one facet, from one sense you're seeing one facet, there are all these other facets. But you're looking through, into, all the way. And that which is true in the very beginning, but not yet in our awareness, not yet seen directly, not yet clear understanding, becomes clear, step by step, day by day, practice by practice. Trying or not trying, stopping or not stopping, each and every one is a rich person's child with no breeches. Naked, clear, unencumbered, each and every one is the child of a rich, of great wealth, great abundance. We call that Buddha nature.
Thanks so much for listening. For meditation supplies such as meditation cushions, incense, malas, liturgical instruments, books, and more, visit the monastery store at monasterystore.org. Support for your spiritual practice at home.